You're listening to a sermon by Brian Burchett, recorded on Sunday, July 6, 2008, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Brian Burchett. I'm a native of California, transplanted here via the long road. I've been married 21 years. I've got 5 children. This is the youngest of my children sitting back here. This is Michaela. She's very excited to meet you. And my wife, Casey. We met Jody, actually lived with us for a time when she was studying at Regent before she met Wes. And before she married Wes, she had known Wes at that time. So that's how we kind of come to know. We've been married 21 years. We came to Canada actually after working for 8 years overseas with Youth of the Mission in the Netherlands. And figured I needed to come back and get some education in theology. So I came back to study at Regent. We hadn't really known about Regent at the time. Oh, I better actually set this, otherwise you guys are in trouble. I have the ability to talk a very long time, so that's not a good thing for you. So we came here to do some study. We'd heard about this school, and we ended up actually, I did my master's here in divinity, then a master's of theology in New Testament studies. But it's interesting, the best courses I had in my first year was actually church history. And because for me, I'd studied a lot, read a lot of the Bible, but never really figured out how we got from the Bible to where we are today. And for me, church history was quite revealing. And one of my favorite groups in there were the Radical Reformers. I don't know if you know those guys. They, a bunch of Swiss guys that ended up influencing this guy named Menno Simons, which is how we ended up here today. I kind of liked him because I remember going along and reading about these guys. Going, man, these guys are really right on. And then all of a sudden, about 3 pages later, they got burned at the stake. I thought, ooh, that's awkward. And then I came to realize as the church began to embrace and see what was going on. They were very influential in how Europe and the gospel was shaped in that point. So that's kind of me. I don't know what else. Yeah. I thought because we're talking about the parables, we should just talk a bit about what they are. You're going to get a long series. I'm just going to take a couple minutes and talk about that. Parables are very simple things. It's a Greek word called parable. It doesn't really matter. The guys who studied rhetoric called them parables because they were a specific kind of story. It was a narrative, very simple, usually had one point, a moral point, possibly a physical point that they were trying to make. And the importance of them were their ability to communicate a moral truth in a very simple way. That's the power of them. They differ a bit from what we would call fairy tales. I don't know if you've ever read fairy tales like Hansel and Gretel and all these ones. They have a moral point, but they're a little different in that they tend to be more magical. Folk tales tend to have this kind of magical aspect to them, whereas parables tend to be based in what we would call real things that could happen. They could actually happen to you. They were probably things in your world that could happen on a day-to-day basis. So they didn't have this magical aspect of them. The funny thing about parables is because they're so simple, they're easy to remember. So if I were to read a line from you, because you know, a farmer went out to sow his seed and some fell along the path. You go, oh yeah, I know that story. You know? Or, there was once a man who was traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho, and when he fell into the hands of some robbers. If I were to read those lines, if you've been someone who've read the parables of Jesus, you would know, you know, one of those is the parable of the sower, and the other one has to do with the Good Samaritan. Because of their simplicity, they're easy to remember. And that's some of their power. They're realistic stories. They can take place in this kind of this real world that we live in. They have a point. They try to make a spiritual point or a moral point, for the most part, that is being made. What's interesting about them is that because they are simple, they're easy to lose their impact if you're not careful. Because we can kind of go, oh, that's what it means. We can skip over sometimes the impact that they would have had upon some of their early members. In their simplest form, sorry about this. In their simplest form, they usually sketch a setting, this is what's happening. They don't give a lot of extra detail, right? They go right to the point, make it very clear. Don't really concern themselves with a lot of extra external detail that's not necessary to the point. It also often involves a character who faces a moral kind of dilemma, some type of choice that they have to make. And then it works out the consequences of those choices. So that's kind of the basic form. You see it both in the spoken language of ancient, and also in the ancient writings. You see this kind of form. And it's not just found necessarily in the Bible. So Jesus is not necessarily made up this form, but is using something that everybody's quite aware of what's going on. The interpreters in the Middle Ages found this too simple. So what they did is they thought, oh, he couldn't really meant talking about sheep and, you know, those kind of, or a lost coin. He must be talking about something much more deep. And they added all these, what they call allegorical kind of meanings to them. You know, the sheep represented, you know, this, and the shepherd represented that. And they would come up with this very complex understanding of these parables. Very symbolic. You know, they were intended to be symbolic in their nature. But modern theologians, there was a German guy who started kind of going, no, I don't think that's really what it's about. And the allegorical kind of reading of the parables by most modern theologians would be basically not seen as probably the right way to read these things. So how does that work then? They're meant for impact. They're not difficult to understand. So what is the point Jesus is making in these things? Moral point, very specific. But often, I find, I don't know, I've been reading the Bible for 30 years now. And I look out here and I figure I'm a rookie, okay? I figure most of you, I was counting, I think we probably have 450 years of Bible reading amongst us if I were to. I'm not going to ask you all to fess up how many years you've been reading the Bible. And I'll be honest, sometimes you read the parables and I don't know. I can intellectually get it. Okay, he means this. But I don't really get it. I don't really grasp the impact of what's going on. Maybe that's me. Maybe it's because they're so simple. Or maybe it's because I'm missing... I think for a long time, I've missed something about Jesus that really is there in the text, but I fail to understand. And one thing I began to notice about parables is that they are really subversive. Hello there. She's waving at me. And what I mean about subversive is that he tells the story and everybody goes, uh-huh, I get it. But it's in the context of which it is said, boy, does it hurt. It has an impact upon these readers that is far beyond sometimes what I've been able to grasp. Now, how many of you have ever owned a sheep? Now, I have. They're not the smartest animals in the world, but we owned sheep early on, so I kind of get that one a bit. I never herded them out in the wilderness. You know, I've never had to go seek one that got lost. Had to run down a few cows, but they're easier to find than sheep. So, how many of you have ever lost? Now, did this one lost coins, keys in the house? My dad used to come. He's like, leave your wallet in one place, and then you won't have to go find it all the time. This is when I was a teenager. He's like, okay, Dad. Can relate to that a bit, but I'm not so sure. Yeah, we've all lost things, and we've all swept our houses looking in the corners. We have little gnomes that deposit things. One time we couldn't find one of the remotes, and we couldn't find our credit card, and we couldn't find this other thing. And one day my wife was in a kid's room, and she opened up this box of one of our daughters, And here was all these little shiny, it's like little, you know, like the little, you know, crow that picks up all the shiny objects and puts them in one place. Our daughter had figured that these were all the very precious items of the house and deposited them all in one box in one place to keep track of them. This is like, okay. We spend hours looking for our credit card sometimes now. But so we can kind of relate to that. The parable of the lost son has some things in it that are very, very different in that sense. But they're subversive. Jesus uses them to really push the truth in sometimes a very inconvenient way. And we're going to try to get there in that. And I want you to try to grasp what that is. He's using simple truths, but in a certain context that really are trying to subvert. You understand? I hope you understand what I mean by that subversiveness. It really gets under the skin of some of the people that are there. He's trying to get them to acknowledge a truth that they hadn't acknowledged before. One gentle thing. We're doing pretty good. One gentle thing about parables. There's usually interesting responses to them. One is, I don't get it, right? You're going to find that they kind of go, Jesus, what are you talking about? This is often the disciples, you know. Jesus will tell this parable and they go, what do you think, John? I don't get that one. I don't know what he's talking about. You know, why doesn't he just say what he means, you know? And that's often some of the response. And I've had those two. There's been a few of them. I just kind of go, even after he explains it, I'm still kind of trying to draw the line between the two. The other one is relief. There are sometimes when Jesus will tell a parable, there's a certain group that's listening to it and kind of goes, wow, that's great. You know, if you're a tax collector and a sinner and people, you know, rejoicing in heaven, if you change, then all these other people that are in God's kingdom, that's its point of relief for you, I would say. They kind of go, wow, really? That's not what we've been told. Okay? Another response is that some people become very uncomfortable. They think they understand what he's saying, and what he's saying they don't like. Have you ever had one of those situations where you kind of go, oh, you know, I think I get what he's saying, but if that's what he's saying, then I don't know if that really is, I don't know if I like what he's saying. It's kind of like my children, you know, when I tell them things, you know, I say, they kind of get it, but they don't necessarily know if they like what dad's telling them to do, and so they, can you repeat that again? That's often what I get. And Jesus uses these stories, and you talk about this hiddenness at times. Jesus is talking about truths that they don't like, and often they become very uncomfortable. You know, it's this whole thing of, you know, you say adultery is this, but I say if you look on a woman in the wrong way, that's adultery. That's a bit uncomfortable. I don't know about you guys, but that's, I find that very uncomfortable, if that's the standard that God sets. Which I'm sure that surprised some of the people of that day as well. So, the last response is just pure offense. They become very angry and basically want to kill Jesus. You know, run him off a cliff. You know, that they it's like, we get it. We don't like it. In fact, you know, you're not of God and you need to die. And there's several places where. And ultimately, this is what leads Jesus into conflict with the Pharisees. So, those are kind of general things. So, as you go through the parables this summer, keep those things in mind. Simple. They're meant to have impact. They're conveying a spiritual meaning, some kind of spiritual truth. And God's using him to make a point. And depending on who the group of people listening to it depends on how that's received. Okay. And I've often missed that point when I've looked at the scriptures. I've often missed that aspect of it. Even though I've read the scripture for 30 years. And sometimes because they're so simple, I miss that fact in the story. Okay. So that's the general stuff. I, I don't really call these the parables of compassion. I don't have a problem with them being called the parables of compassion. I really think that these parables are about lostness, about seeking, restoration, jealousy. The parables of jealousy. Those are good ones. Exclusion. I'm just trying to put a few words on it, trying to figure out what is going on. But I want to paint a picture, and give me a little bit of space here. I want you just to try to put yourself in this situation. Okay? There's a man. You've lived your spiritual life. You've lived here in Vancouver. You're in this community. And you hear there's a stir that starts to come in the papers and some of the things you hear, that there's this man who claims to be from God that's coming to Vancouver. He's been traveling around different places. I don't know how you guys feel about traveling spiritual people, traveling evangelists. But he's coming to Vancouver, and you've heard from people that you respect. You've heard from people you respect that this man, there's been healings that have been happening. I mean, people have been touched. Sicknesses has been healed. There's rumors that he's even raised the dead, though there's some people that kind of question that. And, you know, he's got this group of people he travels around with, and you're not quite sure about that. You know, you don't know what to do, but there's been enough information comes to you from people that you respect, people that you know, that say, you know, this guy really is amazing. I mean, look what he's doing. People are turning to God that haven't ever really turned to God. And you're intrigued and you're curious and you think, okay, you know, he's coming to Vancouver and you've been in this church and you're thinking, you know, people are gonna get him, you know, wonder about this guy. You've got questions coming from your congregation, questions from people that you know. So what do you think about so-and-so? And so you decide to go see. You know that there's this thing that's going out. He's going to be at this place at this time. And you go there to this meeting. And you walk in and it's not quite the way you thought it was. There's about 300 people there. They're all kind of gathered around this place. And it's, there's kind of a banquet that's going on. And, there's food over here on the table. And you look around and you kind of go, okay, you see some of your Christian friends. They're over here in the corner and they're talking a bit. But you kind of start looking around a bit. And you kind of notice there's some interesting people that have come. And you look and you kind of go, okay, there's so-and-so. I know him. He's a developer in our area. And he's kind of not the most honest guy. In fact, I know he's not the most honest guy. And you look around, you look over in the corner here, and you see a few guys dressed in leather and, you know, long beards and t-shirts. And you kind of go, I don't know, but they look like the Hell's Angels. There's three or four of those guys are in the corner, and there's, you know, you go up and start talking to your friends, and they're going, yeah, you know, I go, what's happened? And he goes, well, not much has happened. We've been kind of eating here a bit, and he's sitting over there, and you see this guy, and he's sitting over there, and he's at this table, and he's drinking a beer with these Hells Angels guys, and he's also been talking to, you know, these businessmen, and there's some church leaders that are talking to him a bit, and you look over here, and you notice there's some women who are kind of dressed in clothing that's, is very suggestive. In fact, they're not really dressed very much at all. And, you know, knowing what you know, you're thinking, you know, those aren't normal ladies. You know, they're women that are selling themselves. You've made that perception. You've understand this one. And here's this group of people. And there's pastors mixed in, and there's church people mixed in. And there's this whole crowd of people just in this place. It's very busy. It's loud. You know, it's not like this quiet moment. And you're kind of going, well, this is very interesting. And you kind of talk to your friend and say, what do you think about this? He goes, well, I don't know. I don't know how this works. I don't know how this guy. And you see a bunch of people that he travels with. They're sitting there and they're talking. And your pastor friends are becoming very uncomfortable because of some of the things that they've seen tonight. And they've made some comments about this. And at a certain moment, this man stands up. And he looks at the crowd. And he actually looks over here at this group of Christians that are standing in the corner. And he says, let me tell you a story. There once was a woman who had five cats. She loved her cats. And one of the cats one day went missing. So what did she do? She, you know, she called her neighbors together. She asked them to look for a cat. She says, I'm missing this one. I've had him for years, and I don't know where they are. She's put up signs. She went around the neighborhood, and you're thinking, yeah, well, that's good coyote food. Here's Fluffy. Fluffy's been missing for a few days. And you're thinking, and he goes, finally, after 5 days, she calls you and says, I found my cat. And you're really happy for her because, you know, she's you know, the cats mean a lot to her, and she's had them for years, and she'd be very, very brokenhearted if they were to be gone. And he goes, you know, there's more rejoicing in heaven when one person changes, one sinner changes, than rejoicing for finding these cats. He also says, there's this parable of this man. He goes, let me tell you a story about this man. He had five lottery tickets. And he played the same numbers every week. And he goes, one week he notices that he's won the lottery, $4 million. And he goes to his wallet to find the ticket, and it's not there. So he's, you know, he goes crazy, and he starts looking around his house thinking, what happened to my tickets? And he looks, and he calls his friends and says, I really won the lottery, but I can't find the ticket. And he goes, you know, finally, after several hours, he finds his ticket, and he calls and has this big party and brings everybody over, rejoices. I won $4 million. You know, he's happy. And he goes, you know, there's actually more rejoicing in heaven than this man who's won $4 million in 649. Imagine that. When one person changes, when one person. And then he turns and he's actually looking at the Christians. And he goes, you know, it's interesting. I knew this man once who had a son. And the son started getting involved in drugs. And he, you know, he lived here in Dunbar. And he started to get involved with this local drug dealer, sold him some drugs. And he said, sooner or later he started stealing stuff from the family. Started taking money from this brother and sister that lived in this family. The dad started selling off some of the goods in the house. One day he crashes the car and just disappears, this boy. The father, you know, comes, all of a sudden the bills start coming in, and he's been spending thousands of dollars on pornography sites. You're finding out, you know, people are coming to him looking for him. And the father's concerned. He goes out and he looks at the bus stops and he's trying to find his son. You know, he's not sure what's happened to him. You know, there's rumors that he's been seen on the east side, and dad goes to the east side to try to find his son. I actually knew a man that was like this. And he couldn't find him. And he's looking, and he's brokenhearted, and he's wondering, you know, if his son is going to survive in this world. He's, you know, he's only 17 years old. And he's like, you know, where is he? And he's concerned, and he keeps looking, and the days go by, and he keeps looking for his son. The son actually is in Washington, ends up in Washington State. And he's, you know, hooked on, he's in a crack house there. Can't seem to get off the drugs. He's trying, he's, you know, been stealing from the community to feed his habit. Considered doing things that he's never thought he would in his life. And one day he kind of, you know, he ends up ODing and ends up in the hospital. And he's sitting in the hospital and he just thinks, you know, if I don't do something, I'm going to be dead. If I don't change, if I don't try something, I'm dead. And he packs himself up, and he, you know, they let him out, and he comes back to Vancouver. And dad's working in the yard one day, and he hears this voice, and he thinks, I know that voice. I know that voice. That's my son. And he goes to his son, and he's, you know, pretty rough. He's, Dad, can I stay a while? And he goes, yeah, you can stay a while. He says, go upstairs, take a shower. You know, I'll put some clothes on your bed. You know, go up there, take a shower. And the son goes up and he does this. And he comes down and he's, you know, here's Aunt Harriet. She showed up and
here's the neighbors from next door. And here's, you know, the friends, some of his old friends are showing up there, and there's, you know, the Chinese guy's coming with all the Chinese food, and, you know, there's big things of sushi over here. And he's like, what's going on? He says, oh, we just invited all these people to come. We're so happy that you're here. We're just so glad that you've come back. And we're just rejoicing. We want your friends to come. And we want, you know, you're my son. We want you to be here. And the boy's just overwhelmed. And he's like, whoa. And the sister comes home from work that day, and she sees one of the neighbors come out. She's like, what's going on? She says, your brother's come back, and your dad's throwing a party. And the girl is just furious. And the dad comes out. He's like, what? You know, your brother's here. He says, Dad, are you crazy? I mean, he's like wrecked your car. He stole your money. He stole my money. What are you doing? You know he's not going to be. You know he's not. He's probably not even clean. You know, he's got it. You know, he's not in a rehab house. He's like, you know, but he's here. He's not dead. He's alive. My brother, he was lost. I mean, we had no chance to find him. But he's here now. You know, don't stay outside. And she's furious, and she can't overcome this. And she's like, Dad, you know, I work, and I've done everything you've wanted me to do, and you've never given me a party. You never had a party with my friends. You never, you know, someday surprise me. I come home from work and you have this party for me with my friends. But yet this, you know, this guy, you know, he's embarrassed the family. He's embarrassed you. He's embarrassed me. And yet when he comes home and he's, you know, look at him. Why? He's like, because he's alive. And Jesus looks at the Christians and I don't know about you, but they don't know that we were in the city. We don't know that this guy's a man of God. You know, I would walk out. I've been in meetings like some meetings like this, if I must confess. And I walked out kind of going, this guy's not of God. Why is he giving us a hard time and not the Hell's Angels guys? You know, those are the guys that need to straighten up their lives. These, you know. But we miss the impact. We miss the closeness. It's about lostness. I mean, have you ever been truly lost? There's different kinds of lostness. There's those people that are lost and don't know they're lost. I have kids like that. You know, they're in the middle of Disneyland. Nobody knows where they're at. They're having a great time. Lost as can be. Have no idea. Hey, you're running around. We lost one of my nieces one time. We're running around looking for my niece. And she's like, hey, you know, no problem. She doesn't have a clue she's lost. Right? And then you have this situation where, I don't know if you've ever been hiking in the woods and think, oh, it's just over the hill here. And you hike to the top of the hill and you go, ooh. Where's the river? There's supposed to be a river here. And then in that moment of revelation where you realize you're lost. I saw a funny movie one time and about this people that got lost on this island. He said, oh, it's no problem, you know. It was a bad movie, don't worry about it. But he's like, oh, you know, if we just got to hike up on this mountain and there's a tower there that's a radio tower, we'll just call here because we're on Sumatra Island. And blah, blah, blah. So they hiked to the top of this mountain. He's with this woman who's... doesn't know anything about this stuff. So they hike up there, no radio tower. He proceeds to walk off in the bush and shake the bush. And, I can't believe it, we're lost, we're gonna die, we're gonna, you know, there's no way out of this. And she's standing out there and he walks out and she goes, okay, we may be lost, but I really need for you to tell me it's going to be okay. I don't care if we're lost, but don't tell me that we're lost. And that's how some of us are. But I don't know if you've ever been, I've been lost. I've been lost in Tokyo once. It's kind of hard when you're in the middle of Tokyo and you're kind of like going, I don't understand Japanese. And I have no idea where I'm at. But, see, this is my problem. Oh, goodness me. Okay. Hmm. Jesus' parables. Standing in this room with him at this point in time with the Pharisees, the disciples, tax collectors and sinners. Tax collectors were the, they were the traitors of society. They betrayed Israel to the Romans, collecting money to line their own pockets. They were hated, hated men. Sinners, we can just only surmise what that means. Just pick your sin. Disciples. And you know what he took exception to? And this is where the impact is. The exception was that here were the Pharisees, men who were the guarders of Israel, the keepers of the faith, those who had been faithful to God, they thought. And this is kind of us. That's, I would consider myself, I hope that's where I'm at. And Jesus took exception to them. Do you know why? Because here was somebody who was lost and was now found. It's like this boy. And I knew a boy like this. He left his family, ran away from home, was lost. And you know what? They were mad. They didn't like it. They didn't like that Jesus hung out with them. In fact, they didn't like the fact that in all this crowd, they were the ones that he pointed out to. They were the ones that he took exception with. Only because they had lost that ability to rejoice when someone turns to God. Even though they haven't, even though it's one little step. And there's like a million things that can go wrong. Here's someone saying, I'm lost. I need God. God help me. Do we have compassion? Do I? That's uncomfortable for me. I don't know about you guys. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to me to have forgiveness for a teenage pregnant woman. It's uncomfortable for me to have compassion. It's it because I think, well, they've done so many things wrong, and I can list those things out. And it's interesting, these parables, these specific ones, aren't so much about being lost. That's what I find interesting if you read them. And we've read them this morning. It's about the fact that it's the, you know, of course, three parables. The first two, you go, of course, guy lost his sheep. Of course I'm going to rejoice with him. So we rejoice. The lost coin. Hey, that's, you know, you found your coin. That's great. You know, that's, we kind of go, yeah, that's obvious. Jesus, and that's what Jesus is doing. Of course you would rejoice. They go, yeah, of course you would rejoice. Then all of a sudden he gets to the third one. And guess what? They're not rejoicing. They're like, no. He's embarrassed his father. He's embarrassed God. He's done things that makes him unclean to the law. And he's like, you can rejoice over a coin, but yet you can't have compassion on a soul. And I'd be honest with you, I've known a woman who's lost her cats, and I'm like, yay, that's, I'm so happy over a cat. It's a cat. I don't even like cats, okay? Don't tell my daughters. They get really mad if I say that. Okay? We do. We rejoice over, I can rejoice over the fact that I find my credit card, you know? But yet, I see someone like this and I kind of go, oh, but, you know, they've got to get themselves straightened up, you know, and man, they're going to probably, you know, go back on the drugs again. And that's what Jesus is trying to get at. How could she do that? How could she be so irresponsible to get pregnant as a teenager? She's known God. She's a Christian girl. What's wrong with her? Lostness. I exclude people. And that's what God's getting at. And that's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable for me. And that's that, you know, the first one, you know, we rejoice. Second one, we rejoice. The third one cuts like a knife. The truth cuts like that because God catches us in our emotions. He catches us because, you know, we rejoice over these things, yet that which God wants us to rejoice about, we don't. And I'm still working through that one. Let's pray for a minute. Father, we in our hearts want to follow you. God, we want to be those people that when we stand before you say, well done, good and faithful servant. And God, many of us have been walking and been trying to follow you for years of our lives. And God, you've spoken to us, you've led us. But Lord, I don't want to assume, Lord, I know in my own heart that there are times when you're rejoicing in heaven and I'm not. Because you see people wanting to turn to you and I'm putting barriers in their door. Well, you need to do this, you need to do that. God, have mercy upon me. God, have mercy upon us. God, we want to rejoice when you rejoice. Father, give us the ability to have compassion upon those that are lost. Help us to understand what it, to remember what it's like to be lost without you. God, maybe be those that just can reconcile people to you. Help us. Lord, everyone here touches people around them, God. You put us in the places that we are in to touch those people. Help us, God, to have compassion. Help us to, as we go through the summer too, God, to hear your parables. God, and let that the subversive nature have impact in our lives. Thank you, God.